Hi everybody, welcome to the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. On my new microphone, joined by David J. McCutcheon. Hi, David.
First and foremost, what the fuck? Did you get that microphone out of a Cracker Jack box? Furthermore, secondly, Kenny, you did not introduce me properly.
What?
In order to be a guest on the show, which I now am, because you are so lucky.
Listen, here's the thing, right? You predicted something along with like 200 other people who said AJ will win in Manchester. And then when it happens, you turn into motherfucking Teresa as if you're the only person that did it. Now,
not only was I the only person to guess that correctly,
you were
Jimmy.
Not. You
I
were not the only person. You were not the only person. That's a lie. You're not Trump. You can't just keep shouting it and make it be true.
Responsible for the title change. They weren't going to put it on AJ until they heard me predict it. And they said, the voice of wrestling, which is how you're supposed to introduce me, the voice of wrestling, David J. McCutcheon, thinks that AJ should get the title from gender? Maybe that's a good idea. So you're welcome, Vince McMahon. I'm full of good ideas. Did you hear that pop, Vince? I heard it because I watched it. And it was lovely. Kenny was there. Kenny was a part of the pop. Quite literally, there is a video on the Facebook community, the ITR fan community on Facebook, that shows Kenny lighting up at the three count and grabbing our poor mutual friend, Ollie, and shaking him violently because he was so excited. He could not contain himself. So listeners of the ITR Raw Rundown, number 68, by the way.
That is literally the first week in 68 weeks that he's known the fucking number. Because every week I have to go and find it, I'll go, what week is it this week, David? And he's like, That's a noise.
But you know, I found out for the listenership today, Kenny, because the voice of wrestling...
Listen,
David J. McCutcheon has to be
If you say that, if you say that one more time, you'll be the solo host of this show.
I think people would prefer that because I don't go around spoiling things all the time, Kenny.
I know what you're trying. You're trying to get me. You're trying to get me to say stuff, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not doing it,
Kenny. Because it's all right.
The
voice of wrestling forgives you, Kenny McIntosh.
What is Tony Schiavone here? First of all,
who's going to be the new host of the Raw Rundown, Kenny? It's going to be Tony Schiavone, and I'm going to play the color guy to him instead.
Because
he doesn't spoil things, Kenny, except, you know, Mick Foley winning the title. But nonetheless.
Number one, right? First of all, the intro when I said hello and it sounded a bit weird was because I was holding my mouth and my face against the microphone because I've had a long day of podcasting. And I was hung over to balls this morning. So, you know, there was that. Number two, voice of wrestling. You need help. Professional help. Medical help. Number three. Oh, I'm just going to tell you how I approach things, okay?
I thought you were going to do an Okada thing. And then you get to number three and you go, I don't have a number three. So,
there was a temptation for that, but I'm not going to do it. Number three. And this is just how I handle things. If I don't want to know what happens at a show, right, say for example, I'm sitting at home, right? And I go, okay, it's a Tuesday night and SmackDown is live in the UK. And it's going to be on between about 7:30 and 10 o'clock. And the main event is AJ Styles going for the WWE Championship against Jinder Mahal.
Yeah.
And I don't want to know what the result of that match is. What do you think I would choose to do as sort of like rule number one to ensure that I stay spoiler free?
Rule number one in order to stay spoiler free is to never ask me my prediction, Kenny, because I, as the voice of wrestling, I'm going to tell you exactly what happens. But rule number two would be to stay off of social media entirely until the whole thing blows over.
So, option number one was you crawling up your own arse, so we can negate that.
But I mean, it's only crawling up my own ass if it didn't come true. But since it's a fact,
I'm with you. Sandra and I had an argument about it. You know, because she was like, "You've ruined. You know, I'm very displeased with you right now." And I was like, "But you're never on social media before SmackDown. Like every week, you stay off." And she was like, "Well, you know, the time difference." I was like, "I didn't know." And listen, I get it, right? Like, I'm not supposed to put a spoiler up. I am sorry, but fuck me. Some people are acting like
that. That sounds like a half-hearted apology, Kenny.
It is. Some people are acting like I'm fucking, you know, starting a nuke war with Kim Jong-un. But I'm not. It's a spoiler for a wrestling show. If you don't... Anyway.
Kenny, I spoiled the thing a week ago, so...
No, you didn't.
You're off the hook, Kenny. Kenny, listen to me. You're off the hook,
if you call yourself that fucking name one more time, I swear to God... we will not have a show. And then if people say, why was there no Raw Rundown this week? I'll say, well, David chose to ruin it. So if it's your call on how you...
Kenny, that's fine. I won't call myself the voice of wrestling again. But I will say that I'm letting you off the hook. As the V of W, Kenny, I wanted to let you know that you didn't spoil anything for anybody. I already told them what was going to happen a week ago. You're off the hook, buddy. Nothing happened. It's perfectly fine. Okay, I'm reprieving you.
Here's the difference, right? Here's the difference. The difference is,
you're a free man, innocent.
When I said that I thought AJ might win the title, when numerous other people on social media said they thought it might happen, when it happened, they were just joyous. But you're like the worst kind of human. Do you know what I mean? Because
I only make one prediction a year and then it comes true.
No, but what you do is, you're like the guy in high school, right? Who will go up to someone and, like, knock their paper off the table, right? And then you'll, like, prod them to, like, to, you know, kind of talk back to you. And you'll be like, come on, say something. And then I'll turn around and go, you're a fucking prick. And you go, sir, he just called me a prick. You're that guy. That's what you are.
Kenny, you call me a prick every week, and I've never publicly shamed you for it. That's a very rude thing to say, calling me a prick on TV.
Why have you popped yourself? It wasn't even funny. What are you popping yourself for? You didn't even make a joke. Oh my god! Let's go on with this fucking shambles of a show. We are recording this after the SmackDown summary, which you tried to fucking pigeonhole yourself into because apparently you're allowed to not watch SmackDown for 5 months and then walk back in as if you were there the whole time. Some of us had to sit through the suffering months. Some of us had to put in the hard work. Not you. You just sat in the sidelines and judged, and now that it's something that you like, you're back, and you're like, no, I'm not letting you come in and sweep up the glory.
Yeah, it's true, Kenny. I had to go and fix SmackDown with my predictions, and you just sat there and wallowed in misery for 5 months. But, you know, I figured since I fixed it, I should be allowed to speak on it. That was just my thing. But, hey, I'm happy that you got to do your thing, too.
I wish your heart surgery had not turned out as well as it had. Maybe like 90% as well as it had, so that you had a little bit of like brain damage, so that like this podcast would not be as infuriating for me. But alas, that's not the cards I was dealt.
Listen to him. I fixed SmackDown for him. All he did was complain all summer about how bad SmackDown was. I fixed it for him, and this is the thanks I get, you guys. Jeez. Next time, I'll just predict the gender wins the championship. Would you like that, Kenny?
I'm sure you'll hop in that bandwagon at some point.
Because now you've infuriated me. So Vince, let's get a second title reign.
You're not doing it again. Let's move on. Let's do the usual thing that we do. Okay. Hey, David, how was your week? That's when you find us. Thing you want to talk about?
Kenny, it was wonderful. You know, I watched SmackDown.
Did you fuck the wife?
You know, a couple of pumps. Okay, it was a good time. You know,
What would you say is your strength in the bedroom?
Boy, that's really hard because there's so many of them.
Hard to narrow it down, right?
Really difficult to think. I mean, not think of one. Narrow it down to only one. I would say, Kenny, it would be. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's very hard for me to say. What would you say is my strength in the bedroom?
I mean, listen. I have no intention to get into that cave. I'll stay out here in the sunlight.
I think it would be my dirty talk, Kenny. You know.
Oh fuck. Oh Jesus.
Who's your champion? It's gender, bitch. There you go.
Nice to see you call your wife a bitch. That's really. You're really pitching the flag in that feminist born.
Who's to say that was my wife, Kenny? We were talking about our encounters.
Oh, dirty bastard! Do you know? Yeah. I was thinking about this. I was thinking about what would my strength be in the bedroom, and I was trying to narrow it down. And then I took a poll of the last 100 people.
Oh.
That were given the gift of Kenny.
I can't believe that they're still around and healthy after everything you've
I mean, they can them. They can barely walk, but you know that's just you know the sometimes you need there's a consequence to your action. But I think what
chlamydia is a very hard thing to get rid of. I agree.
Well, after Val gave me it, only took 2 tries of the medication. I got rid of it, but I did rock her world once. That is, but let's not talk about me and Val. That's not what we're here to talk about. But I think probably
she did. The curtain pulled back, you guys. My wife came in and she said, "Here, I'll give you a kiss goodbye," before she left for work, and then she kissed me, and then she goes, "I meant you, not Kenny, but I'll blow Kenny a kiss."
Sorry, that's not the first time she's blown me. Anyway, I would say my strength in the bedroom is my ability to adapt. I'll give you an example.
Sure.
I once was asked to dress up, and I did not want to do this. I was like, right, come on. Enough's enough, right?
I'm sure it wasn't your idea.
And I was told, look, could you just dress up as Hulk Hogan? And I said, well, you know, I'll see if I have anything in the old cupboard. And
which Hulk Hogan was it? Was it
Hogan 2002 Return, undisputed title. You know, so I've got the full tights on. You know, trousery tights, because I have skinny legs. That's not the part you want to show off. But then I have the vest on that same. So luckily I had that full costume in the cupboard.
Yeah.
And then I was asked to perform a Hulk Hogan leg drop to kick off proceedings, and I did so. Right. And
that's usually the finish, though.
Well, you know, I like to warm up with something big, you know, and then...
Okay, that's fair, that's fair. It goes against ring psychology, but I'll give it to you.
And then what I do is, once the leg drop has been hit, I press play on the Spotify and Real American plays, and basically what I aim to do is get through every single possible part of my repertoire by the end of the 3:14 song, and then leave. But I do sometimes.
Hey, Hogan's got a pose.
I do sometimes leave a bandana as like a calling card.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Like so.
In American sports, there was a baseball player named Derek Jeter, and he got around a lot. And he would have it to where, like, back at his condo, he would have his butler give the lady of the night, whoever she may be, a gift basket.
And that is classy.
It would have a bunch of trinkets inside, an autographed baseball. You know, his signature's worth like $800. So, you know, nice little memento.
I feel like giving someone an autograph of yourself is maybe a little bit on the, you know, conceited side. I mean, wouldn't you just give her the $800? No, that's prostitution. You can't give her the $800.
No, you can't give her
$800, but you can give her a ball which is worth $800 that she can then sell.
Yes.
She's got to put in the work.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's
how you make it legal, though. So, Kenny, I'm just offering some advice for you. You know, those Inside the Ropes t-shirts, they're very comfortable, and you can get those at
insidetheropes.co.uk. Go to the shop, you can get them there.
There you go.
Also, a new t-shirt on the way.
New t-shirts coming. You could get one of those t-shirts, you could autograph it and put it in a gift basket. That's all I'm saying, Kenny. I'm just offering ideas.
That is true. I mean, what I thought I could do is get some 8x10s done, which I thought, do you remember in the Attitude Era where they used to have the home videos that they brought out? And they do.
Sure.
You have the Austin 316 Uncensored or Undertaker the Phenom. And I was looking through them to see what poses I could recreate for my 8x10. And I came across what I think is the perfect one. And it's the cover of Sable Unleashed. And it's just me on a beach in a bikini straddling towards a horse.
Oh, now see, that's pretty good. Now, if I were to do that, I think I would go with the sunny one where she has like the pool cue between her boobs. That would be mine. I've still got some nice breasts, you know, a bit hairy, but nice regardless, right? So I could do that with the pool cue. I think that would look cute, Kenny.
We could do like, you know, maybe they were both in the Raw magazine cover at the same time, collab the two covers. We could have a cover off.
Oh, that would be good. That's a good way to get people to buy more. See? This is, TV Guide had the right idea. TV Guide did that all the time. You had one cover with Goldberg, one cover with Steve Austin.
There you go.
To the layman, no one could tell them apart.
It's a great idea. Now, I want to fill you in on something very quick before we begin talking about Raw. So I got to go to a couple of the house shows last week, and I went to the Glasgow one, and like the Glasgow. So just to give you a bit of perspective, okay? Let me just pull this up here because I feel like the best way to do it is to sort of compare. You know, compare like what people had at different events, right? So.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You were in the St. Louis house show in October.
Oh, yeah. I sure was, Kenny.
Okay, so let's read out your card that you had for your Raw event that you were at, and then I'll read out the one that came to Glasgow.
Sure.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Okay, so David had... Where the fuck is it? This fucking sports key that is pish. Jesus Christ. No wonder they're... Anyway, I'm not saying what I was going to say. WWE St. Louis results 2017. Come on. Fucking internet.
The first match right off
the bat...
Oh,
here we go. I've got it now. I've got it. WrestlingInc.com to the rescue. We've got Bayley and Sasha Banks defeating Emma and Alicia Fox with Dana Brooke. So you got to... Dana Brooke was the guest referee. So you got to see one of Emma's last shows. That's good.
I did. I got to see one of Emma's very last appearances in the WWE, Kenny.
Then you got Matt Hardy versus Dash Wilder in the battle of Where Is My Partner.
Yeah.
You got Titus O'Neil and Goldust against Kurt Hawkins and the return of Darren Young.
Yeah, one of Darren Young's last shows and one of the last times that the primetime players were ever in the ring together. Kenny, it was a historic night in St. Louis.
I can almost feel the emotion. Braun Strowman and Finn Balor in a match. You had Alexa...
Total squash, by the way. Braun ended up winning in about 2 minutes.
Alexa Bliss and Mickie James, they had a match.
Yeah, it was very boring.
Kalisto and Enzo Amore.
Ah, boy. Just riveting television. Too bad it wasn't on TV.
And then the main event was Rollins and Ambrose against Sheamus and Cesaro. So that was where the bar was set.
So yeah, the bar was set with the bar. That is very true.
Here's what I got. Asuka versus Mickie James.
Ah, who wants to see that?
Fucking Japs. The Miz versus Matt Hardy for the IC title.
Yeah.
Then we had Jason Jordan, Rhino, Heath Slater, and Goldust against Elias, Gallows, and Anderson and Bo Dallas.
So you got to walk with Elias. Was Elias in the ring or out of the ring?
He was in the ring. He also sang Wonderwall and then did a Glasgow-specific lyric, which I enjoyed.
Well, I will say this about him in the ring. He was actively performing. Therefore, my show was better because I didn't have to see him perform, but I still got to hear the song.
There you go. Then we had after that. Enzo Amore versus Kalisto, you can't win them all. Then we had Pete Dunne versus Wolfgang for the UK title. Then we had Braun Strowman versus Kane. Then we had Finn Balor versus Samoa Joe. Then we had Sasha and Bayley against Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss. And in the main event, we had The Shield and Triple H against Bray Wyatt, Sheamus, and Cesaro. So I think the message is do not go to a house show in St. Louis. Really?
Oh, what are you talking about?
Darren Young.
I got to see Darren Young's last match, Kenny. That being said.
What
an emotional night. Everybody in the front row was crying.
I want a fucking refund.
busted my joke.
So then we went to Aberdeen. We went to Aberdeen for the SmackDown House show, did a little interview with Jinder, etc., etc., etc. So anyway, We're standing
there. Review is on the Facebook, is on the YouTube page. For
it's on the YouTube channel, yeah, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, two-parter. Now, we were in there, and the thing is, Aberdeen, God bless Aberdeen, because Aberdeen's a lot like Glasgow. There's good parts, but there's also shite parts. And we had an amalgam, there was a lot of nice people came up and said hello, and they recognised me and stuff. Far too many of them were like, oh, what do you think of that blonde poo situation? I would just walk on. You know, so there was various things happened. And then I saw this couple, and I felt just so sorry for them. And I thought, oh, God, you know, I'm probably going to have to make fun of them on the podcast. That's probably what's going to have to happen. So the guy was like Harvey Whippleman level of skinny, right? And his girlfriend was like Bertha Faye.
Good old birth.
Now listen, you know, I'm not going to judge. You know, I've been you know, skinnier and I've been bigger in my lifetime, so I've held both ends of the ropes. But the part that just made me cackle with laughter, and I don't know why, that the large woman was carrying about a money in the bank briefcase. And I turned to my friend and I said, any money, she's going to try and cash in for her hole tonight at some point. And he's going to have no fucking choice. Because you could tell, if she wants to go, he's probably just going to go with it. There's just no way that he's going to argue. And she's also got the briefcase.
Right. They're going to have a go.
So she's got the briefcase. And so that was the kind of level of people that were in Aberdeen. But then, yesterday I was in Manchester, obviously, for the tapings, and I go and stop by the Comedy Store where we do a lot of our events because we are currently negotiating the final dates for Chris Jericho coming over in April. So I was gonna give away the exact dates there. I was like, I can't yet. So anyway, I was speaking to one of the women at the Comedy Store that we deal with a lot, and she said that she was walking down the street in Manchester, and she saw, like, in one of the big hotels was these, like, two massive tour buses with a fence. And she was, like, nosy, right? She thought, I wonder what that is. And she goes up to one of the guys, and she thought, oh, this must be something really big. And then she sees the crowd outside the hotel. She's like, oh, it can't be anything current with this fan base. It's going to have to be something, you know, old or whatever. Which, you know, offensive but true. And she goes up to one of the guys. She says, oh, what are you here for? And he looked at her as if she was scum and went, ugh, WWE, of course. And she looked him straight in the eye and she said, I wouldn't be speaking to me with that tone when you're standing outside a hotel behind a fence with a fucking clipboard, pal, and walked off. And I just thought, that is the best comeback to this guy that's standing with a clipboard outside a hotel giving a woman grief for not deigning to know that the WWE are in town, in Manchester.
Right.
Because, of course.
What a presumptuous prick.
That's what I was going to say. Presumptuous prick. But with that being said, is there anything else that you want to talk about? I feel like I should give you the right before we begin to talk about Chris Jericho going to New Japan to face Kenny Omega. You're a big New Japan guy, so how do you feel about Y2J stepping into WK12?
It's Chris Jericho's the smartest wrestler in the professional wrestling business. And I'm not sure if he did this. Everything I've heard says that he did it without the WWE's knowledge or permission. And of course, with his contract situation, he wouldn't need their permission anyway. I guess more of a blessing would be the proper word. He's the smartest guy in the business, though. He knows exactly where the hotbed of professional wrestling is right now. And that is New Japan. That's the fact right now. All eyes are on New Japan. It's the hottest that it's been in decades. Maybe ever. I don't really know the historics too much. Have to get your good pal Dave Meltzer. You guys are friendly again, right?
Who?
You and the Melts?
I don't know who that is. Sorry.
Oh.
I'm kidding. Me and Dave, we're pals. I like to think. I don't think he thinks that, but I think that. I like to, for everything I say on Twitter now, put hashtag joke just in case it gets picked up.
got to start labeling all that and tagging
it. I do love that somebody said to me, they were like, can you believe that Meltzer thought you were reputable enough to be a source and then you fucked it by putting up an intermission joke? I was like, oh, well. Accurate.
Tripping on your own shoestrings there, buddy. But yeah, I mean, this is a big deal though with Jericho. I don't know if he can hang with the likes of a Kenny Omega, and that's not a knock on Jericho at all, but Omega is the best, one of the two best wrestlers in the world right now, I would argue. And he's in the prime physical condition of his life, and he's in the prime years of his life. So just the perfect storm for Omega. And even if Jericho can't hang, it's not going to impact the match at all. You're talking about a guy that wrestles blow-up dolls and broomsticks. So, I mean, this guy can go with just about anybody, and Jericho will look like $1 million in the first place. I remember reading in Jericho's book, one of them, I forget exactly which one, I think it may have been the third book. He mentioned that Hogan would want to work with guys like Jericho later in his career because he knew that Jericho would take care of him and make him look like $1 million in the ring. And I have a feeling that that's something that Jericho picked up from the Hulkster, Kenny. I know that you are a big Hulk Hogan fan. And so I thought I would pass that along, that I found that kind of interesting, the little bit of correlation there. Jericho is now no longer in his prime, but he can still go. He can still have an excellent match. But he is picking his opponents to be, just so coincidentally, the best wrestlers in the world.
Well, no, like I think it's very smart, and you know, Jericho's always got it. You know, he's always understood wrestling really well, and like as soon as he put all that stuff out, you knew something was going on. You know.
Oh yeah.
So I'm pretty stoked about it. I did want to say. Now, you know that in the past, we've had, some of us here Inside the Ropes are fans, and some of us are not, of Mr. Joseph Ryan.
Ah, yes, the good old Joey Ryan himself.
And Joey Ryan now has a, let me find this. Here we go. He has, so I just want to get your take on it. There's no right or wrong answer here. I just want David J. McCutcheon to elaborate to me in a long form way how you feel about this. So Joey Ryan posted the following. I won the Hood Slam Intergalactic Tag Team Championships with my penis as my partner tonight. The penis was a woman dressed in a penis costume, and the finisher was him holding the penis as if it's like a dick and then hitting his opponent with the penis.
I mean, we've talked about our sexual proclivities on the show to open it up. So I feel like criticizing at this point would be a little hilarious for us to do. However, I will say that we are not wrestlers, never claimed to be wrestlers, never in the wrestling industry in terms of stepping in the ropes and performing or anything of that nature.
You mean stepping inside the ropes?
Yeah. We're inside the ropes, but we're not within the ropes. So, I mean, to me, I would have to see it. Where did this take place at?
Hood Slam.
What the fuck is that?
I don't fucking know. It's a promotion or something. I'll send you the clip.
If it is a joke promotion, then whatever, who cares? But you know, it's a fart in the wind, Kenny. It dissipates and is forgotten about.
If you could, so he has a penis as his tag team partner. If you could have a object as a tag team partner, what would you choose?
Ooh, cheese grater. I always thought the cheese grater was the worst possible thing that you could use on somebody in the wrestling ring. So I would have just a gigantic cheese grater that's the size of this woman dressed as a dick. And that would deter everyone except New Jack, who would then use the cheese grater on me to kill me.
I'm going to go one better. I would have as a tag team partner a cactus tree, because as soon as you hit it, it pricks you every time. And then it splashes.
That's pretty good.
And then it splashes you, and it's basically like thumbtacks on you.
Yeah, no, that is very good. Maybe actually our two partners would turn on us and form their own tag team of a cheese grater and a cactus.
I smell NXT in their future.
Before I smell MMW in their future.
Fuck. Before we talk about Raw, though, very quickly, this has just come out in the news. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have been sent home from WWE's European tour. The only information I can get on it so far is PW Insider reported that Owens and Zayn have been sent home following the SmackDown taping, and that it was confirmed by multiple sources. Pro Wrestling Sheet also said that two independent sources have claimed that they were removed from the rest of the SmackDown tour due to disciplinary reasons. And in an update, Sports Illustrated's Justin Barrasso reports that Kevin and Sami went into business for themselves when they were on camera on SmackDown this week. No specific word on what that means, but it could be a situation where they went off script while doing the promo. And that's kind of the story.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of watch this space. If it's something is going off script, I think that's really a bad example to make of them, because you constantly talk about the brass ring and this and that, and then whenever people are reprimanded for,
I would be very surprised if it's that though.
I would be highly shocked if that's why, because Vince always likes guys that take chances and risks, right? That's the purpose.
Also, the thing is, Owens is in this kind of top program with, you know, Vince and Shane and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, to me, it must be something. I don't understand why you would send them home. I mean, what could they have done?
Yeah, think about how much money they're going to lose based on those guys not being there, because those guys are a draw. If I were going to SmackDown and those guys weren't on the card, and especially if Jinder were on top, obviously this isn't the case now, but if Jinder were on top and those guys aren't on the card, I'm not going and I'm wanting a refund. Period.
I mean, the thing is, they've been quite clever in that they don't really advertise now that much. They do advertise, but it always seems to be the only ever offer refunds if, like, Cena's not on. Like, they didn't offer you a refund when Roman wasn't there, did they?
No, they offered me Darren Young.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't be homophobic. Darren Young, there's nothing wrong with that.
If Darren Young wanted to have sex with me, I might say yeah, because he's a gorgeous man. But instead, he wanted to wrestle in front of me, and that's no. I don't want to see
that. I love that you'd rather Darren Young fucked you than wrestled in front of you. You'd rather change orientation than watch him wrestle. That's how awful his wrestling is.
Somebody asked me the other day. They go, "So you're bisexual, right?" And I go, "No, I'm not. I'm heterosexual. Like 90. Everybody's a little gay, right, Kenny? Like the Kinsey scale." Right? So everybody's a little gay.
What's the Kinsey scale?
You need to Google it. I'm not going to explain the Kinsey scale. but feel free to Google it. It's a theory that everybody is has a little bit of a fluidity with their sexuality, right? So, like, you know, you may not be, like, for example, I'm not gay at all. I'm 90% heterosexual. But there's a few guys that I see and I'm just like, damn, look at Finn Balor's abs. Holy shit. Right? I mean, you know, you do that, right? If you're an honest man, that's the way that it goes.
There's actually a BuzzFeed article where you can find it where you are on the Kinsey scale.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I don't know if I would trust a BuzzFeed article, but yeah. I actually have something to tell you about the BuzzFeed articles, but I can't say it on the air. It's top secret stuff.
Okay.
So I will remind me after we're done here, and all you listeners out there wondering what all this is about, remind me after we're done, Kenny. I'll give you top secret info.
I will get that from you. So yeah, that's pretty much everything before we get to Raw. Was there anything else? No, I think that's it. So let's
wrestling. Yeah.
God, I mean, yeah, Triple H turns up in ICW. I mean, the thing is, you know Triple H turned up in ICW because he was like, Jericho's away to Japan, I'll go to fucking the Indies and tell him I love them. You could so tell. Like, and the thing is, see, if I was him, I'd probably do the same thing. I'm not even gonna lie.
Try to steal the spotlight. Though, 100%. Let's be honest, though. Jericho won the spotlight duel in that instance.
Oh, of course he did. Of course he did.
He's facing the best wrestler in the world at the biggest non-WWE show of the year. So, I mean, hey, buddy, kudos, buddy. You did it.
I also maintain I'm pretty confident that Jericho knows this is his last real shot to go and do something like this.
Yeah, and kudos to him, man. He's sticking it out. I'm going to have to get something New Japan oriented for you to have him sign whenever he goes on tour with you guys.
100%. Okay, so let's talk about Raw. Quite a stacked show. I was there in Manchester. I thought it was a really fun show live. I had a really good time. I actually think that the Raw and SmackDown tapings this week were arguably the best set of Raw and SmackDown tapings they've ever done in the UK.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you had the two big title changes, which was awesome. It was eventful.
Stuff happened that mattered. It made sense. The crowd were really into it. I think in these two shows that they really upped the ante for Survivor Series. They've now made Survivor Series has went from a kind of a, okay, it's kind of Raw versus SmackDown, champions versus champions, and now there's so much more than there was 40 hours ago. You know, now you've got AJ and Brock. Now you've maybe got The Shield and The New Day, which is insane.
Yeah.
The five on...
Think about this, Kenny. We might get The Shield versus The New Day and The Bar versus The Usos.
And AJ versus Brock. And Shane, Cena, Rude, Nakamura, and Orton against... Angle, Jordan. I know people don't like Jordan in it, but I'm happy that the storyline might go somewhere now.
Me too!
Finn, Braun, and Joe. And I think that 5-on-5 has contended to be match of the year. If they, like, they're, everybody in that match is good. Every single person. Jordan.
I would argue it's really hard for big multi-man matches to be considered match of the year because it gets a little clustery at times. It's sort of like a Money in the Bank ladder match. They're really good matches, but it really misses out on the stakes and the drama oftentimes whenever there's a lot of moving pieces in a match. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I also mean that as within the WWE match scale before anybody emails me and just like screams Okada at me 12 times. I'm like, I get it. Cause it's funny, I was actually talking to somebody the other day and I was saying, you know, it's quite difficult sometimes to be objective rather than subjective because, like, you know, WWE is my preferred choice of wrestling, right? That's my favorite. That's what I like to watch.
Right.
And my favorite wrestler right now is Braun Strowman, right?
Right.
So if you said to me, put a list of your top 10 wrestlers, Braun Strowman's probably number one. Okada probably wouldn't be in my top 10. But if you say to me, give me a list of the best wrestlers, Okada's probably going to be number one.
Yeah.
And that's not because he's my favorite. It's because that's the objective answer.
Now, Kenny, I know that you don't watch a lot of New Japan, but can I implore you, whenever you get a free moment, to watch a match that's about 40 minutes long?
Sure. In all honesty, I've only watched one of the Okada Omega series. So I need to catch up on the rest of that. But yeah, whatever other one you have got suggested, I will check out.
The one that I really want you to watch, because I know that you haven't got to see a lot of Tetsuya Naito.
Whatever match you tell me, I will watch it and we'll talk about it in the rundown next week.
Okay, cool. Watch the G1 final from this year with Kenny Omega seeking his rematch against Okada by taking on Tetsuya Naito. Whoever wins goes on to Wrestle Kingdom, and obviously you know that Omega loses because he is facing Chris Jericho at Wrestle Kingdom instead. But it is a heartbreaking match for Kenny Omega because he just beat Okada for the first time in the G1 tournament. And so if he beats Naito here, he moves on to presumably beat Okada again. But he didn't. He couldn't get past Naito. He used all of his... all of his strength up in the match against Okada the night before. So it's an amazing match, though. It's kind of sloppy, which I like. It's not picture perfect like the Okada Omega match.
I love sloppy wrestling matches. Because like the thing about Omega and Okada that kind of like people are gonna kill me for this. I know it's great, and I'm watching it going, "This is fantastic." But sometimes I go, I think it was Omega and Okada. I could be getting it wrong. Where Okada hits the Rainmaker, but he doesn't get all of it. And then Omega kicks out because he didn't get the full Rainmaker.
Yeah.
And I love that touch because it was like, oh, but if he'd hit the full Rainmaker, there's no way. There's no way you can kick out of it. But like sometimes I like when a guy, like, he can't hit all of a move or he can't, you know, and there's like a, because if it's just crisp, and he gets too choreographed, you kind of lose me a little bit.
Yeah. As to where that's exactly why I want you to watch this match. It's kind of sloppy in spots, and that's not a bad thing. That means that it looked like a real fight, and they didn't get all of the moves, and it didn't look picture perfect, and they sold it as, man, I should have gotten all that move, and this would have been the end of it. And I love that. I think me and you are on the same page with that. If it's a real fight, it shouldn't look perfect.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. Yeah, but remind me.
Watch that match, and you will enjoy it.
Remind me and send it over to me, and I'll watch it. And I've actually tonight going to watch the ESPN 30 for 30 and Ric Flair. I'm very excited about watching that. I've been waiting a long time for that, so that should be good as well.
I need to catch that too. I
will send you a file, sir.
Very nice. Thank you. Sir.
So let's talk about Raw. I thought it was a really good show. From a live perspective, interestingly enough, Raw, they kind of ran it like it was live. Like, you know, they had all the breaks that you usually have in the arena, whereas SmackDown, they didn't do that. They just kind of like, it just went right through. So SmackDown was like 90 minutes long. But then whereas Raw really was about 3 hours. They had a couple of dark matches. They had Matt Hardy against Curt Hawkins. They had a tag match with some UK guys, and then they had the Good Brothers against cannot remember who.
Poor Good Brothers.
It created that much of a memory for me. I just can't remember who they were facing. Who the fuck were they facing?
Good Brothers.
Oh, it was Heath Slater and Rhino. So there you go. Anyway, so we kick off Raw.
Only other tag team on Raw.
The only other tag team, yeah. Also, shout out, somebody said this on Twitter, and I wish I could fucking remember who it was, but somebody said that the way to cope with Booker T's commentary now is to imagine he's just like off his face on drugs. And I tried it, and it actually works. Like, if you think he's just like smothered in cocaine, he is brilliant.
I have an excellent Booker T rant.
Oh, what better way to start out this show than to tell us?
I've come up with a new character for Booker T, and it may seem insensitive, so I do apologize, but I'm not going to apologize to the point where I'm not going to do this.
I mean, that's it. You're about to apologize to the man who called Alicia Fox the missing link.
Well, I like the idea that they're in like some alternate universe. Because he's already teetering over the edge a bit with this. He hates Jason Jordan, right? Like, just inexplicably, and there's no reason to explain why. It's just he's constantly going on and on and on about Jason Jordan, won't shut the fuck up about it. So I love the idea that, like, there's this version of Booker T that just goes over the edge with it, and he starts just, like, wishing diseases and everything on the guy. You know, and they're like, oh, Jason Jordan whipped into the corner over there, and he's just like, I tell you what, dog, it would be terrible if he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma right now. I'm just saying. And then it's like, oh, God, what? He didn't just say that, right? And then you just are like, I tell you what, it would sure be terrible if a bunch of people put some ticks inside his bag and then he got Lyme disease from it. I'm just saying.
I'm all aboard that new Booker T. All aboard. As long as one of the weeks he says, I hope he... As long as one week I want him to wish full-blown AIDS. That's my only request. And then I'm happy.
You know, so he need to get rid of that syphilis before his dick ride off. I'm just saying.
I love that I love that your Booker T morphs slightly into Ahmed Johnson. Like... It's
the
like,
angrier he gets, yeah.
Yeah, the angrier he gets, the more Ahmed Johnson it becomes. Jesus. But so we kick off. Joe, you know, it's funny though. So Corey Graves comes out first, then Michael Cole comes out for Raw, and then Booker T comes out, and everybody goes fucking nuts for him. And I'm sitting with Finn. I'm sitting with Finn Martin, and Finn just starts cackling, going, "He's fucking shit." Like, and Finn's just like, you know, because Finn's.
Martin impression.
Finn's on the pints. So he's just I mean he didn't go as far as to do the Cena thing, but he goes, "He's a massive dweeb." But he got close. So anyway, Mad Finn.
Oh fuck, I'm gonna pledge $50 to Patreon just to hear you and Finn do a podcast where it's you as Finn and him as you.
You know what's funny though? So I should not be telling this on air. But I take him into the little hospitality area. And he's like walking around, we're having a wee look. And then they've got some goodie bags, right? Like, oh, I love a wee goodie bag, right? So pick it up and get a wee WWE baseball cap and a Monday Night Raw t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the press goodies.
Yeah, and I got a wee like Raw WWE power pack from my mobile. I was like, oh, that's great. And so I pick one up. So Finn picks one up. And we're walking upstairs and I was like, oh, did you get yourself a gift bag, Finn? You know, just to make him small talk to me. Yeah, I'm going to punt it on eBay tomorrow. And I laughed. He's deadly fucking serious, so look out for it on eBay, folks. Finn Martin, if you see a WWE press bag on eBay, you know who it is. It'll be... Anyway, so Raw kicks off with The Miz and The Miz Taraj in the ring. Big props to Axel for still wearing a neck brace. They're doing Miz TV. He cuts a promo on Baron Corbin, a really fun promo actually on Big Baza Corbs. Then introduces Kurt Angle as his guest. Angle comes out. Angle tells Miz, despite the differences, that he has Angle's full support of Survivor Series. Miz then says, you know, I wish I could say the same to you. Showed the footage of Stephanie threatening to fire Angle. And, you know, then Angle goes on to talk about, you know, SmackDown's had a good run for 18 years, but Shane's got an inferiority complex. SmackDown will always be the B show. And then Miz sort of like gets on at Angle for letting Strowman do what he did last week and then rewarding him with a space in the team. And then Angle kind of gets a bit front. Well, Miz tries to do the when my arm's up, your mouth goes shut to Angle, and Angle's just having fucking none of it. So he like swipes his arm away and then basically Miz is told that he has a match tonight with Braun Strowman, to the roar of the crowd as Miz is on his hands and knees pleading for this match not to happen. What did you think of the opening segment with Kurt and The Miz?
It was really dynamite, and it made me realize how badly I want to see these two fight each other. And as kooky as it sounds, I think The Miz is very deserving of one of Kurt Angle's few matches that he will have in WWE.
Miz is sensational. He really is.
Yes, yes. He has earned the right to face Kurt Angle. He is someone who is safe in the ring. Therefore, he will have a good, safe match with Kurt Angle. You don't got to worry about Kurt getting hurt in it. And more importantly, though, he's earned the right to face Kurt Angle, I think.
I wouldn't argue with you. If Kurt Angle's got like 5 or 6 matches left, Miz would be one. The thing that is a problem for Miz is a great character, but he's not someone that people think about as being great in the ring. So, like, yeah. When there's like a feud to happen, they go, oh, nobody thinks about Miz because that's not a match that they clamor for. But, like,
If you're watching WWE for great wrestling, you're watching it for the wrong reason, because they have the time restraints and the style restraints, everything. You watch WWE for the pageantry.
But
and
also,
The Miz
is
excellent at that.
I think the key here is, like, The Miz managed to make me intrigued about a Dolph Ziggler title chase. I mean, what?
If that doesn't say it, then I don't know what will.
I mean, honestly, go back and watch that No Mercy match, career for title ladder match, whatever it was. Was that a ladder match or was that a regular match? I think it was a ladder match.
I want to say it had a ladder in it, but I could be... I don't know. I think it was a ladder.
Okay, I'm checking as we're talking, but like that match was so fantastic. Like it was so good. And I think a lot of it was to do with Miz. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that I think it was just such a great story, and it's not a ladder match. Okay, but it was Miz and Dolph and No Mercy for the IC title, career versus title, and it was just superb and another example why he's so great. Anyway, up next, the worst part of the show by a country mile. Elias sings, which was lovely, of course.
The best.
And then we had to get Elias versus Jason Jordan in a guitar and a pole match. Whew, Manchester hated Jason Jordan. They hated him.
This is going to be, I think this could be the beginning for his heel turn, if they're smart.
Well, you know, the people, you know, you look at that 5-on-5 match Survivor Series and everyone's going, oh, well, you know, there's 9 great guys and there's Jason Jordan. I'm going, didn't you see his matches with Cena and Reigns on Raw? This guy's good. This guy is really good. Character-wise, yeah, he's absolutely, you know, cold as ice. But, like, yeah. Jason Jordan in a big match scenario, I think he'll do well. Like, and I think you're right. I think we are going to get a turn from him, and I think it's probably the best thing for him. You know, hopefully something to.
And I love, I don't know if we should just touch on this now, because why not? The less said about this match, the better. But I love his inclusion on the Survivor Series team. And if I had to pick one more person to round out that team, it would be Jason Jordan. And a bunch of people are going to get angry with me over that. I do not care. I am right. I'm the voice of wrestling. And history will prove me correct in the long run. You will all see it. And then you will go, wow, the voice of wrestling was right again? My goodness. How many times can he be right in 1 year, Kenny?
Up next, we have Sheamus and Cesaro backstage with Kurt Angle.
How did you feel about his inclusion? You didn't even go anywhere.
Well, I mean, you were starting that voice of wrestling pitch. I thought I better move on before we have to sit for 17 minutes talking about that. No, I think his inclusion in the match is a good call, because you have to do something with the storyline, right? Like, you have to try and...
There has to be a payoff.
You have to do something. So, like, turn the guy heel and see what he's got. And if he's not any good, then you can, you know, put him back on SmackDown. Eventually, you can, you know, team up with Gable to take out Benjamin and then go back to being American Alpha. Like, you can always, there's always a backup. The thing is, like, sometimes, I mean, people do give WWE shit, sometimes they do deserve it. I think creatively, in some ways, they've done some good stuff this year than they've done before. And I think the Jason Jordan thing was a good attempt. They tried something different and wacky. It's not worked yet, but I think there's still a ways to go that you can make it work. And, you know, he's had some, like, decent time on TV, right? He had those matches with Cena and Reigns. I think it was the right call to kind of cool off that Miz program he was in, because that just wasn't the right call for him.
Yeah.
Because Miz is at that point where he's so good as a heel that he would be cheered over Jordan every time.
Yes. Yeah. You can't put him against a heel that people are liking.
So, but yeah, I think he could be the little dark horse of the match, because I you don't know what he's going to do.
And he's good in ring.
Mm-hmm. The other day I watched the last year's 5-on-5 match, the men's match. I would encourage people to go back and give it a watch. It's a great match. But I actually think the in-ring talent this year is stronger than it was last year. Yeah. I mean, last year you had guys like...
The roster keeps getting better.
Yeah. Like, last year you had guys... You had Seth, Roman, and Dean. You had Orton and Bray. You had Shane. And AJ was in there and stuff, and it was really good. But this year, there's so many guys... Like, there's Cena, who does the big match style really well. There's Shane and Angle, who have got their limitations based on either not being a real wrestler or, you know, being older. And then you've got guys like Nakamura, Balor, Finn, Bobby Roode, Orton... you know, all these guys that Braun, who can just bring the mentalness to it. So I think there's just a great concoction to be good. So hopefully. Sheamus and Cesaro accused Kurt Angle of playing favourites. They said that they want to represent Raw Survivor Series as the tag team champions, and Angle said they had one more chance. Funny story, in the arena, I think they tried to film this promo live, and Kurt Angle completely fucked up his lines, so they had to just turn off the screen. So I didn't even know what we only found out there was a tag title match when the graphic came up a couple of minutes later, because we did not know what happened to that promo.
It's funny though.
But unfortunately, Jinder Mahal wasn't on the show for Kurt. Up next, we had Asuka versus Stacey Coates. This one was really fun because I actually know Courtney, who is Stacey Coates. She's a very, very nice girl, and she's worked really hard in the last couple of years to improve, and as a young female wrestler, that's really difficult. So I'm very, very happy for her that she got this chance to just get on Raw and be an enhancement girl for Asuka. She also got a tryout as well, so yeah, good for her, and nice to see Asuka killing it as well.
Yeah, these are the type of matches that need to need to happen for Asuka, I think. But was the crowd dead for this? They really seemed it on TV.
Yeah, I think they were just a little bit, nah. They popped for the entrance, but then once they realized it was just a kind of enhancement match, they were kind of done. And then
I gotcha.
I think for me, Asuka's the big test for her is going to be Survivor Series.
This is going to be juggling lit dynamite, Kenny. That's the best way that I can describe this. It's going to be really rough, man. They've got to be very careful with what they do with Asuka. She has to remain undefeated. Would you agree?
Oh, of course she does. Now, if you do something where, say you have to defeat her, right? Like, I don't want it to happen.
But if it's not a singles, that's.
But my, you know, I don't want it to happen. I really don't. But if it does happen, I want it to be something where it's like a count out thing, or it's she's not actually lost. You know, she's just like fucked off, and she's been brawling or something.
No pin or submission.
Oh no, I don't want to see a pin. I can handle something where like if she's not in a badass fight with someone and she's like brawling all over the arena and she gets counted out, I can handle that.
Or a DQ, actually, or a DQ. That would be. Yeah, DQ I could tolerate to where she just goes mental on someone, and then
that's fine, that's badass, but not a pinfall or submission. Jesus Christ!
And in fact, if they are going to have her lose, it's got to be the DQ because they can make her look like a badass with the DQ.
Indeed. We got Titus and Apollo.
But ideally, we agree that she should like eliminate everyone, right? Like it should come down to only her. And she just carves through all the remaining people.
Yeah, I think she should kill people. I'm looking forward to WrestleMania, right? Because it's that time of year where you kind of need to be thinking about it. And if so, at the moment, WrestleMania is going to have the four horsewomen versus the four horsewomen. But my fear is for Asuka. Who could she face that would get her on the WrestleMania card? There is nobody right now. Outside of the four horsewomen. So I worry for her about what there is for her to do.
Her and Alexa Bliss. It'll be a slow burn that finally culminates at Mania. That's my prediction.
Controversially, I think her and Nia would be better.
I would agree with that. But we've already seen it at NXT, though. And it's not like Nia's really changed that much. From NXT, as to where Alexa Bliss has definitely changed from NXT.
I like Alexa, but I don't know.
It doesn't have that big match appeal, but I mean.
Do you know what it sounds to me? It sounds like kickoff material. I'll make you a challenge, right? This is a challenge for next week. Take 20 minutes out of your day between now and next week, right? And write down every male and female member of SmackDown and Raw. And cross out everyone who you don't think will make it, who you definitely don't think will make it on the card at WrestleMania, blah, blah, blah. And then try and figure out where you could put everyone. It is impossible.
It's very, very difficult. How many matches are you allotting?
Well, I would say, let's look at this year's, because this year's was like the most stretched of all. Because if you look at it, you've got everybody you had last year. But on top of that, you've got Bobby Roode, you've got Nakamura, you've got
Asuka,
you've got Samoa Joe, you've got Finn Balor back. You know, there's all these people that are there. Kurt Angle, who's now part of it. So there's so many people. So this year in WrestleMania, there was three pre-show matches and then 10 main show matches. So you have 13 matches, and that includes your battle royal.
Yeah, pardon me.
It is tough to come up with the all those matches, but maybe we do a thing. Maybe we go away this week, And as part of next week's Raw Rundown, we both come back with a suggested card for the other.
Okay.
That could be fun.
We can do that.
And let's make the parameters. It would be what we would like to see within a realistic environment.
Sure.
And you're allowed to bring somebody in who you think, like, if you wanted to bring in Goldberg, you could because it's realistic. But yes. You couldn't bring in Austin because that's not realistic.
Exactly.
Okay. The challenge is on. And if you guys at home want to make your own cards as well, do it with us and we'll
Facebook community.
Yeah. We'll have a little card off. Because somebody did it recently in the Facebook community and I kind of got involved. But anyway, so back to Raw. We had Titus O'Neil and Apollo Crews talking about how Titus this week's going to face Samoa Joe for what he did last week. Titus and Apollo come out and Samoa Joe jumps him from behind because he is the coolest motherfucker on the planet. He took out Crews and then hit Titus with a coquina clutch. Referees are trying to pull him off. Joe gets in the ring and says he'll put down anyone that stands in his way and he calls out anyone for a fight. Finn Balor comes out. There was a huge Let's Go Balor chant. People loved Finn Balor in this building. They have just a really fun TV match. Very, very hard hitting. What I liked about this match was I felt like they were fighting to be on the Survivor Series team. Even though it wasn't official. Because to them, they want to be in the big matches that get them the big money because they're big money performers. That's
absolutely. It's easy to understand and easy to digest.
Yeah, and, you know, like, Joe avoids the coup de grace. Joe starts the coquina clutch when Balor's standing up, but he pushes off the ropes to break the hold and then double stomps on Joe. It's just so great. And then they're fighting at ringside. Joe tosses Balor out the entrance ramp, and then they both get counted out. Fans are booing. Now, when they were having the match, I'm sure you probably did this at home as well. I was sitting, I said to Finn, I said, this is a double counter, a double DQ, because they both have to get in this team. So
yeah,
this has to be it, because why would you pin one of these guys in this environment? So then they have the fight on stage, and then Kurt Angle comes out as security or putting them apart, and he says, you know, that's the type of attitude I want to see. You're both in the Survivor Series team. And then as Joe is on the floor with security, Balor teases leaving, then takes a running start and leaps onto Joe on the ground as his music plays.
It was one of the coolest spots that I've seen in a while. Yeah. It was awesome.
I thought the whole thing
was great.
The attacking Titus, the calling somebody out, the Balor Joe match, the post match shenanigans, the brawl, the announcement. I thought it was just really exciting stuff. That, like, the biggest compliment I can give it is it reminded me of when I used to watch wrestling in the Attitude Era and big things would happen on Raw.
Yeah. These guys, I think that it actually did a lot of favors for Finn, believe it or not.
Yeah, I get that. I get that favors for both of them.
It did, but I feel like Finn needed a little bit of rehabilitation after
Finn
that
needed
horrible...
That shine. Yeah,
he needed something after that Bray Wyatt feud. Where do you think Bray Wyatt goes to after this? Like...
I don't think we see Bray Wyatt till after Survivor Series.
I don't think we need to.
Truthfully, maybe you send him a SmackDown or something. I mean, the thing is, okay, you're more of a Bray Wyatt fan right now than I am, right? That's fair to say.
Yeah.
You have the book. Who do you want to see Bray against next?
I don't want to see Bray against anybody for a while. That's my issue. If I were creative, I would take Bray off of TV until after the Rumble, or have him come back at the Rumble and have a really strong showing and not win. You know, ultimately throw out, like, you know, seven guys or something and be in the match a while. And that sort of gives him – sort of removes the horrible taste in the mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, the that would be good. Realistically, they're probably not going to do it. I mean, what I would like to see is... You remember, like, when The Undertaker was in the Ministry?
Yeah.
And he kind of, like, ran shit but didn't wrestle that often?
Yeah.
I'd like to see Wyatt start kidnapping people.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see more angles with Wyatt. I just don't know, like, where his character would go.
Yeah, I think you need to get him a cult. Like, I remember there was this TV show, I don't know if anybody saw it, called The Following... And it was with Kevin Bacon. And the story was Kevin Bacon was this FBI agent guy, and he'd he'd got in this, I'm not going to spoil it all, but he basically got into this thing with this professor who ended up running a cult who would kill people. Yeah. And the whole story of the show is that he now is going to sort of get back into this world of trying to find this guy again. And I feel the idea of Joe with a cult, Bray with a cult, any kind of fucks with people and he sends people out to do his dirty work and all that, minimal promo but maximum chicanery,
yeah,
would be really strong for Bray. And then, yeah, like maybe the Rumble's the first time he actually wrestles, because I just don't think anybody really wants to see any program with him right now, and he's in danger of becoming Ziggler, and that's what you don't want.
Yeah, and it's...
Ugh. Did Andy watch this show going, oh man, where's Bray Wyatt?
No. And that's an issue, because he is an excellent character, you know? And they don't have a lot of excellent characters. They really don't.
Nope. So
yeah. They have tons of good wrestlers, but not a whole lot of excellent characters. And they need guys like Bray, but it's just a matter of, you know, positioning them well.
We had Bo Dallas giving Miz a speech, and Axel was there, and Miz is, you know, just terrified. Talks about, you know, Strowman's flesh and bones. That Bo Dallas said that they could do this, and Axel said that Strowman really is a monster among men, which just made me want to kill myself, that line. And basically the gist of it is Axel said that if Miz isn't afraid, then they can all do this. Miz just looks terrified. Angle calls Daniel Bryan to leave a message. You know, he had no idea Kane was going to attack him. He's asked Bryan to call him back. Jason Jordan comes in, and Angle says, you know, I need people I can trust, and you're going to be the fifth member of Team Raw. And they hug. The reaction in the arena was the worst for this. People were booing like shit that he's the fifth member of the team. Which, you know what? If I was I was getting a drink when it happened, so I just heard it. But if I'd been sitting down, I'd probably just booed as well, to be honest. I did forget to say that Alicia.
It's good though.
Yeah,
it'll expand their story, and which is good, because otherwise, if you don't expand on it, then it was just for nothing, and that's bad. You don't want to do stuff just for nothing.
And also, we'll get to it at the end, but arguably, I would rather Roman Reigns is not in that match because there's somewhere else I want to see him. So
yes,
we will get to that. Also, I forgot to say that Asuka was invited to be on the Survivor Series team by Alicia Fox, who is obviously the captain of the ship. There's an interview with Sasha and Bayley backstage. I really couldn't care to go over it, but it's, you know, basically they're trying to get in the team.
Yeah.
Sasha and Bayley against Nia and Alicia. Sasha ends up getting the win. She's got the bank statement on Alicia Fox. And that win for Sasha Banks makes Alicia Fox offer her a space in the team, but not a space for Bayley. What did you think of this tag match and Sasha being on the team, but Bayley not?
I'm kind of interested about the Bayley thing. I don't know if you noticed or not, but it seemed that Bayley was tearing up a bit whenever they started the Hey Bayley song. I don't know if you noticed that in the arena or not.
I didn't.
Yeah. Whenever they did that, she had to wipe her eyes. So based on that, it was a really sweet move. You know what I mean? It was just kind of a feel good moment. You know, you saw that and you're like, aw. And it made me sad for Bayley, actually, more than anything. I was like, man, that she's really had a fall from grace over the past 6 months. It's been a rough 6 months for her, but I really hope she can turn it around and find her way. I'm hoping that maybe not being included on the Survivor Series team, maybe she'll come out and cost Raw and jump the SmackDown as a heel. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that she got this reaction and stuff, but I always think about the Heyman line, you cannot be afraid to fail if you want to succeed.
Yeah.
And if Bayley sticks in the current place that she is, I just don't think it's going to get better for her.
Yeah.
So I think she needs to... She needs to just, like, get out of her comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Sami Zayn. Look at how great he's doing.
I was just about to say, with Sami, yeah, really, really breaking through there.
So up next we have Braun Strowman versus The Miz, non-title. Miz is just trying to run away from him the whole time. You know, Miz is trying everything he can to try and just like keep up with Strowman. What I loved about this was it basically was like a horror movie in a wrestling ring. Miz was like Neve Campbell and Braun Strowman was the mask from Scream, and that was what we were watching in a ring. But as Miz is about to be just, you know, murdered uncontrollably, there's a bit though I could not stop laughing when Strowman just picks Miz up and throws him over the top rope onto Axel and Dallas like he was like nothing. It was like the greatest thing. Then Kane's music plays, he comes out, they start brawling, and then Strowman power slams him, but Kane sits, we were sitting in the arena, as soon as he power slams him, we were like, oh, please sit up, Kane, please sit up, and then he sat up, and we were popping like motherfuckers. You can't beat an old school Kane sit up, you know? And then Strowman clotheslines him, and he does the whole kind of land on his feet thing, so, you know, they're... Strowman got some revenge on The Miz, but they're very much still talking, you know, showing you that Braun and Kane have got a rivalry. So what did you think of it? And do you see Kane getting involved in the 5-on-5 match Survivor Series?
It would be kind of fun. It's so hard that men's 5-on-5 is going to be so difficult to predict because there's so many different anomalies that pop up here and there to kind of throw it off track. Will Sammy and Kevin get involved and cause SmackDown? Will Kane somehow get involved? If he is, what happens with Braun? There's just so many different ways this could go. I'm really excited about it, though, because anytime wrestling is unpredictable, that's when it's at its best. What say you, Kenny?
Yeah, like, the main thing I like about this whole Survivor Series thing is I like that there are big matches happening and there are also other key characters who are not involved in matches.
Yeah.
Because then it tells you, are they going to do something? Like, are we really going to get through a whole Survivor Series without Sammy and Kevin Owens trying to fuck up things for Shane?
Yeah.
Is Kane going to let Braun Strowman get through a whole Survivor Series without getting involved in the match? I don't think they will. So, I think there's enough, like, fun elements that, like... I'm really looking forward to Survivor Series. Like, really looking forward to it.
You know what I'm looking forward to about Survivor Series, Kenny?
What's that?
Pizza party.
Oh, you get your pizza party. Yeah,
I do. I have a pizza party for all of the four big pay-per-views. So we will have a pizza party in New Orleans.
Oh, 100%. What we'll do is we will have a night of pizza where we watch some build-up stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
So, yeah, and we will do a meetup, by the way, in New Orleans for anyone who's asking. And, you know, I a few people from the UK are coming. A few people from the US.
I would love to do the ancient art of karaoke, Kenny.
That is, I mean, I hate karaoke with every fiber of my being, but if it...
How can you hate karaoke?
Do you know why I hate it, right? So say,
no.
Say you're doing karaoke, right?
Sure.
And you, so what's your song that you sing? I know you've got
No Diggity. No Diggity by Blackstreet.
Okay,
no doubt.
So you're up singing No Diggity, and I'm sitting there, right, and you're doing your song. Now, the problem I have is what seems to happen to me is that when your eyes lock on to me when you're singing this song, right, you're singing this song and you're looking at me, first of all, I'm uncomfortable because all of a sudden we're in a moment that I don't want to be in. Second of all, I don't know what to give you facially. I don't know what you want from me. Do you want me to give a face as if to say, I could be in an arena right now listening to this? Do you want me to give a pity look? Do you want me to pretend like I'm enjoying it? I don't know what look to give.
I want your honest opinion, Kenny. So whenever I look at you and I'm singing some No Diggity, and I go, can't get her out of my mind. I think about that girl all the time. I want you to look at me and go, oh, I didn't know he had those pipes on him. And then
I came along to the karaoke bar and then the agreement was I get to sit in the corner with a pair of sunglasses on?
You could do that. You could be the guy wearing sunglasses who loves hating straws.
Don't you dare bring up Strawgate.
Then I would come up to you and I'd slap that fucking the fucking sunglasses off your face and I'd go, it's indoors, you cunt.
Don't even get me started on that. I'm with you all the way. All the way, Matt. Anyway, New Orleans talk later. So after this, we get Renee Young doing an interview with Seth and Dean. They're talking about, you know, the title defense against Sheamus and Cesaro. They're being a bit cocky. Rollins says that Sheamus and Cesaro are the least cool people on the planet, which comes from Seth Rollins. I think it was Dean that asked, you know, Renee Young, does she like them? She says she doesn't know. And then Rollins and Ambrose do the fist pump, and after they leave, Renee sticks out her fist, and it was the cutest thing she's ever done. So Ollie and I were talking about this. Renee Young is the dream girl, right? She is the dream woman of all time, because she's very attractive, she's super down to earth, she's funny, she's easy to talk to, she just makes you feel good about life, right? And yeah, we've all known a Renee Young in our life, because Renee will make you feel, when she's chatting to you, like you're the most important person in the world. She'll befriend everybody. She'll be friends with the geeks at high school. She'll be friends with the emos and the fatties and everybody in high school. She will befriend. But deep down, you know that she loves the bad boy, right? And it's
yes, the ultimate heartbreak.
Yep, that's Renee Young. She is a heartbreak for everybody. I don't care what gender you are, what orientation you are. Yeah. Renee Young heartbreaks every single person on this planet.
You know who Renee Young is, essentially? She is the heterosexual equivalent to Finn Balor's abs, right? Like, everybody, it doesn't matter how you feel sexually, what your inclination is, how you were born, it does not matter. Because the second you see her, you fall in love with her. She is easily my biggest crush in the world, Kenny. I
met her last year very briefly for an interview, I think it was, and I just
How was she?
She's just so nice. Like, she's so nice, and then she was on Total Divas, and she was even better. Like, on Total Divas, you were just like, I want to hang out with her more now. she loves going to the bar, going to get a cocktail. She loves going to a little vacay. Oh, I love her. Anyway,
the best. WWE is so lucky to have found her too. They like got the golden goose with Renee Young.
And the good thing is she loves
she's
wrestling.
She's the best woman that's ever worked in that facility for that company, and in that capacity, I should say. And I honestly think that she's up there with like the all-time greats of handling situations. And
yeah, she's dynamite. Enzo Amore comes out to do his shtick. He's, you know, good on about Manchester, talking about Kalisto being a midget. So I'm gonna say this without implicating anyone. And the person who I'm implicating is listening right now, so I'm not gonna say who the person is. But anyway, I happen to know some people who are around in the WWE, and somebody had said to me, listen, I need to tell you something. I was like, okay, what is it? And they were like, I met Kalisto today. And I was like, all right. And they were like, he's actually a really nice guy. And my response was I had two responses. I sent the word fuck, and then I waited 60 seconds and sent the word off. That's all I had. I don't give a fuck if he's related to Mother Teresa. He can go fuck off with his lucha shite. Because he's a pile of wank. Any disagreements there, David?
I'll plead the fifth. I do not know Kalisto, but I would love to get to know Kalisto. He's a lovely man.
He blocked me on Twitter. You're supposed to stick up for your friend here.
Let me search. Hold on 1 second. Kalisto, I can still see all of his stuff. He didn't block me, therefore I'm perfectly fine with him. I'm sure he's a lovely gentleman.
I mean, I love the fact that you have no loyalty to your friends.
Kenny, he has shown no disdain for the voice of wrestling.
You're a dick. Anyway, Enzo is talking about Kalisto. Kalisto comes out, he sits down in a chair where he belongs, and then Pete Dunne's music hits. And everyone's like, what? And then Kurt Angle comes out and announces that it's going to be the Cruiserweight versus the Bruiserweight. He announces Pete Dunne for the first time on Raw. The crowd go mental. Pete Dunne comes out. Enzo, in one of the greatest moments in wrestling history, Enzo does his dance and Pete Dunne just smacks him in the face. It is the best thing I've ever seen. Like,
so funny.
Oh, so Pete just kills him in like 3.5 minutes. And then, unfortunately, so Kalisto comes in there like a wee fucking rat, right? To raise the hand of Pete Dunne. He had to obviously reach quite high because he's a midget. And he raised Pete Dunne's hand and I'm just thinking, please just kill him, Pete Dunne. Please just smack him in the fucking head. But he doesn't because he had to pretend, you know. Anyway. So Pete Dunne wins. Kalisto, the wee fucking glory cunt in the corner. And we have to move on with our lives. But I was actually... So when Pete Dunne came out, Enzo was doing his promo, and I just thought it was going to be an Enzo Kalisto thing. So I go up to the bar, and I hear this music, and I'm talking to a friend, and I hear this music in my head, and I'm going, I thought it was Pete Dunne's music or something. And my friend's talking, and I just went, that's fucking Pete Dunne's music, and ran right back into the arena to see it and hear the Enzo. It was the coolest moment. How'd it come across on TV?
It was awesome. It was great. They played it up as a big deal. They mentioned the UK tournament, and Michael Cole said that he was one of the guys that he was the most impressed with whenever he called the UK tournament. It came across really good. I enjoyed it a lot. Pete Dunne, a little bit of stiff shots here and there, especially towards that finish. It was really good. I like whenever they laid the stuff in like that, and it's always fun to watch Enzo take an ass-kicking.
And he does it very well.
Yeah, you know, fair play. He's good at it.
I've got to say, though, like, Enzo Amore, fair play to him because, like, I'm not saying the Cruiserweight division is, like, the best thing in the world, but, like, I watch it with about 10 times more tolerance than I did before he was champion. So... that is a testament to how good I think he is in the role that he's playing right now. So I just want to give a little shout out to Enzo. I think he's doing really well.
His promo was fucking atrocious this week, though. They were actually burying him on commentary. You could tell that Vince was like, fucking bury him! I'm sick of this shit! How long has he gotta go on? It was great. Corey was just like... the worst thing I've ever heard. Somebody get out here and shut him up. So you know that Vince is just in the back going, God damn, pal.
You do have quite a good Vince impression.
Thank you. I will.
The problem is whenever I give you a compliment, you bulldoze a compliment into submission, you know? Like,
well, I get them so infrequently from you, Kenny, that I have to lift them up for the world to see. Kenny, shouldn't that say how much I love and care about you, that whenever I get your approval, I'm elated by it?
Then you just stab me in the back right after it. you know what you're doing, motherfucker. You know exactly what you're doing. Don't you play innocent here.
I am a good friend who appreciates your friendship so much, but I won't say bad things about Kalisto.
Well, that shows that you're not a good friend, because if a wrestler blocked you, I'd have your back, because that's what friends do. There's so many, and I want to thank.
I don't brag about them.
I would like to thank all of our lovely listeners and friends here at Inside the Ropes who are good friends to me and support me in my innocent. Mauling by that midget. You've all stood by me, not like David, because he doesn't have a bone of loyalty in his body, apparently. But for all of you who do, I really appreciate it.
Kenny, you're a businessman, and you're very smart with your business. I watch you run Inside the Ropes, and I go, man, he's a very savvy businessman. And I'm just trying to look out for MMW. Whenever Kalisto eventually gets released, we're going to have a new top star in the territory.
You do realize that you can't pay Kalisto in hot dogs, though. He will want actual cash.
No. You give it time. It's sort of like the really good looking person at high school. You'll be able to get with them one day. It's just going to take a number of days for them to fall down to your standards and age.
Do you ever notice, though, like, so when I was in high school, I was like the fat kid.
Sure.
And what I've noticed from a lot of like high school stuff is all the kids who were fat and unpopular grow up to be like better looking than they were and like more successful. And like the kind of people who were like really popular and like got all of the kind of everything they wanted, you see them like 15 years later and you're like, oh fuck, what happened to you?
Right, right. I always say if I ever have a kid, I want that kid to be ugly. That way the ugly kid can build character, you know? Character will take you a lot of places in life, Kenny. Kenny, if I look the way that I do, but didn't talk the way that I do, do you think I'd be anywhere in life?
You are, and I mean this with love and affection, I still don't believe you're a real person. Like, I don't know how it's happened. I don't know how you exist.
Because I'm just
world.
That great.
No. I feel like what happened was there was like a factory malfunction. You're like one of those like figures. You're like the Papa Shango with the like El Matador body, like Hasbro. That you're just like, how did that ever get made? That like Zack Ryder would
eyes, one eye over in the corner, the other eye on the shoulder,
and like Zack Ryder would buy you for his private collection, that kind of thing. So that's what you remind me of. Anyway. We get told that Brock Lesnar will be appearing on next week's Raw. Now he's going to be appearing to fucking talk about his match with AJ. Also, Roman Reigns is going to be on Raw next week, so a pretty stacked show for next week in Atlanta. Pretty excited about that. Also, next week we're going to have the WWE 24 special on Goldberg following next week's Raw, which I'm very, very keen to see. And see what that... Because the 24 specials are great, right? So I'm sure it'll be no different for Goldberg's. We have Alexa Bliss doing an interview with Charlie Caruso, talking about how Natalya was never a champion when she was on SmackDown, and that she was a two-time SmackDown Women's Champion, just promoting the match with Natalya coming up at the pay-per-view. Main event time, Sheamus and Cesaro going up against The Shield. The Shield, huge reaction in Manchester. Sheamus and Cesaro were wearing Liverpool football jerseys, of course, because we're in Manchester, so they want to get booed. So they have this like really fun match. The crowd is chanting, "This is awesome." There's near falls, and all of a sudden, the New Day's music hits. They come through the crowd Shield fashion. They cut a promo. They say that it's going to be Under Siege Part 2. Kurt Angle runs out with half the fucking roster. They're all circling the ring. New Day mock Raw for not doing anything. And then they say it's going to be Under Siege Part 2. Jason Jordan starts running up the fucking aisle. New Day run away. And then as this is all happening, Rollins turns around into a brogue kick from Sheamus for a 1-2-3. Sheamus and Cesaro win the Raw Tag Team titles. New Day escape. And everything's kind of a bit chaotic. And now it's going to be the Bar versus the Usos of Survivor Series. David, what the fuck was this? Break it down.
I was going ballistic for this, Kenny. You should have heard me. Screaming literally at the top of my lungs. I'm surprised the police weren't called to my house. I was screaming at the top of my lungs. Brogue kick him! He's right there! The titles are on the line! He's being a fucking daft moron! He's looking in the other direction! The match is still going on! The bell hasn't rang! What are you doing? And then the second I was screaming all of that, Sheamus immediately pops up, sets up the brogue kick, and I'm just screaming, "Yes! Yes!" And then he manages to hit him with it and pinned 1-2-3 while Ambrose didn't even know what the hell was going on with Rollins being laid out. I was going ballistic, Kenny. Why? Because it made perfect sense. I'm like, if the titles are on the line, why do you care about brand loyalty? You could be the champions. You could have the gold, Kenny. Kenneth! It only made sense. Sheamus is my new favorite wrestler now because he did something that made sense. It's not that hard to become my new favorite wrestler. Just do things logically, Kenny.
I thought this was a phenomenal main event segment. It was just so good.
Oh, so great! It propelled the story. It was a great match. It had a logical finish. New champions, the team that I love. Ugh. I'm over the moon.
And do you know what else? It took us from, before this, we had the 5-on-5 match, which was going to include Roman Reigns. We had the Shield against the Usos. And we were looking at a Survivor Series that probably didn't have the Bar or the New Day involved in matches. Now, we have the 5-on-5 match that gives Jason Jordan something to enhance his story. We might get the Shield versus the fucking New Day. and we're getting the bar against the Usos. Like, is this Christmas? AJ and Brock as well?
It's amazing how much
Cena's on the SmackDown team. Jesus Christ.
The WWE television just dramatically improved over the course of 3 days. It went to being like 50% better than it was 3 days. Like 3 days ago, if you would have told me, oh, WWE's about to get 50% better, I go, what, did Stone Cold come back? Like, did they resurrect Macho Man? What happened?
The thing is, when the Under Siege thing started, they had to advance it every week in a way that people were going to be excited. And I go back to what I was saying a couple of weeks ago with my friend Sarah. This kind of chaos is what wrestling fans love. And it doesn't all need to, I mean, because wrestling is bonkers, right? Like,
yeah, of course.
You can tell me your favorite feud of all time, and I bet you I can pick 100 plot holes in it if I want to find it. But as long as now and then, you know, like you were talking about the thing with Sheamus, is like, put in some stuff where people capitalize on things.
Yeah.
And because now it's like, I understand why SmackDown are attacking Raw. I understand why they want to make a statement. I understand why Kurt Angle's putting himself in the match. I understand why he feels like he needs to win. I understand why the Shield are now pissed. There's loads of stuff. So yeah, I thought this was a really hot episode of Raw, really fun ending. And yeah, I never knew how much I wanted the Shield versus the New Day, and I want it very badly.
Yeah, I'm so excited for it. And now we get both of those teams together on the Survivor Series card. I can't wait for it. I don't know what goes on the pre-show. You know?
I will say this, and I said it on the SmackDown summary, and maybe people are going to think I'm the last guy that should be saying this, but maybe I'm biased because I've spent a little bit of time with him recently and stuff, but I thought that Jinder Mahal put in the best performance of his career against AJ Styles on SmackDown, and I think that the guy deserves to be on Survivor Series in some form.
Well, you can't have him going from your champion of 6 months to not being on the card of one of the four biggest shows of the year.
I think it would be unfair to him, and it'd be unfair to the story you've tried to do. You know?
Yes, exactly.
And the thing is,
you can't act like the story didn't happen.
And also, from day one, and I've said that, you know, his title reign has fucking annoyed the shit out of me. Like, everybody knows that.
Yes.
But it was never that I thought. It was never that I was like, oh, I don't think Jinder should be there or anything. Like, I think he has got a presence about him. I think he has got something there, whatever it is. And, you know, he had that match with AJ. So, yeah, I don't want him in the world title picture again, but you put him in the mid-card, see what happens. Give him some stuff
to
do.
Kenny, 2 years ago, The Miz was my least favorite wrestler. Whenever a segment would come on with The Miz, I would turn it off. Now he's one of the best assets that the company has as a whole on Raw or SmackDown and deserves to be on every show, no matter what, in a prominent light. All I'm saying is, with time and creative, anything can happen for anyone.
Look at Braun Strowman. Look at Braun Strowman. 2 years ago.
Braun Strowman, perfect example.
I could. I was like, get rid of him. Get rid of him, and now I'm just like, I love him. But no, I think that I'm not changing my mind all of a sudden, going, oh, now I think that the Jinder title reign was the best thing they've ever done. It is not at all,
yeah.
And I still stand by what I said. But I think that what has come out of it is that he has become somewhat of a star, not a main eventer, but he has become like when I was at the show on Friday in Aberdeen, and then I was at the show last night in Manchester. There is a presence to him. Like, yeah. There is. And if he's able to kind of cultivate that in the mid-card and organically move up, I think people might be okay with it. And
exactly as The Miz did.
Exactly as The Miz did. Because if we hearken this back, what happened to The Miz in 2011? He was given the world title before he was ready. And also, at the time, the difference between him and Jinder is that he was given... He was given like these, you know, Cena and Rock, and had to be louder than them, you know. Whereas Jinder's problem is Jinder was not ready to, you know, I think the worst thing that happened was Jinder and Nakamura getting together at the same time. It was the worst combination.
Absolutely the worst. You know, I had a fun analogy with the Miz's career. Alan Proven mentioned it on Twitter, and then I bounced it off of him, and I said, you know the movie Benjamin Button, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, about the man who was born as an old man and dies as a baby? That's the Miz's career. He was there on top before he was ready for it, and he was champion and main eventing WrestleMania long before he ever deserved it, and now that he actually has earned it and actually deserves it, he'll never get it.
Yeah, go figure. But there was a period in WWE where what they used to do around 2010, 2011 is they would give these young guys a title reign, and they would. It was too soon for all of them. Jack Swagger, yeah. Dolph Ziggler, Miz, and then they would never let the guys really get anywhere with it, and they would never, you know, really get behind them. So they'd have like 3 weeks to prove that they could move a rating, and if they didn't, they were gone. Or move down, but no. I think that for Survivor Series, I hope that Jinder gets to be a part of it in some way, shape, or form.
I completely agree. And also to interrupt, Pro Wrestling Sheet has more on the Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn situation.
Okay, let's get on to that as we finish the show. But while I'm pulling that up here, let's talk about your rating for this week's Monday Night Raw. In Manchester, England, what is your rating out of 10?
I think I would give this one a solid 8 out of 10. I thought that the main event segment was just bonkers, just amazingly good. A bunch of the other stuff was kind of hit or miss, like the women's tag situation and the Elias thing with the guitar and everything. That really weighed it down, but the good stuff on here was really worth watching, and if you only watch one thing on Raw this week, it's got to be that main event match and that finish. Oh, what a hot finish. It was so good. These guys can main event any show, and I would not care one bit. They absolutely deserve it.
I would also give this an 8 out of 10. I think 80% of this show was just mint. It was great. The only things, like you were saying, the only things I think were kind of poor were the Elias Jason Jordan thing and the women's tag. I would say, as well as the main event, go and check out Samoa Joe and Finn Balor. Go check that out. Check out the post-match brawl. It's just really, really good. I think they've really managed to make Survivor Series for a second year in a row now feel like a big pay-per-view. Like, I feel as excited about Survivor Series as I did about SummerSlam. Maybe more, actually, about the whole card. Because with SummerSlam, it was the four-way, right? We were all excited about the four-way. But
yeah, of course.
Now I'm like, pretty much most of the card, you know, like, the men's 5-on-5, the women's 5-on-5, the Shield and the New Day, the tag title match, AJ and Brock, you know, that's like 5 matches already. I'm like, sign me up.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it should be really good. But let's talk about this Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn situation. So, Pro Wrestling Sheet is saying that they went against a creative directive given to them before SmackDown, and it contributed to them being sent home. They were supposed to feed for the New Day following the match with Sami and Kofi Kingston, but for some reason they just didn't follow the directions and left the ring. So they were supposed to sort of let the New Day get like a comeback, I guess. They just
bailed. Post-match, I'm guessing.
Yeah, post-match, and then they just bailed. So New Day then stood waiting. Same for the sound crew who didn't play anyone's music, and the segment ended awkwardly when they just went off script by not taking their plan beaten afterwards. After the story was published, but then being sent home, multiple sources are saying that the duo have been slightly difficult to work with lately and seem unhappy backstage. But apparently it's worth noting that they were both close with Jimmy Jacobs and Neville. What I would say is I really hope they're able to make it through this, because Sami Zayn has just been given the biggest push of his time there so far. Yeah. And I hope that he can, you know, you all hate jobs sometimes, but like, these guys are so good. And like, Kevin Owens has just been given this huge thing with Shane and all this sort of stuff. So I really hope they don't blow it. I really hope they don't, because they're just such a great act.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see what they're doing on SmackDown on Tuesday.
Do you want my honest opinion on this?
Sure.
I'm not worried one bit for Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. They may be reprimanded a little bit, but it's not going to ultimately matter in the long run. They're still going to be on the same trajectory.
My worry is more if they're unhappy backstage if they want to get out. Because if they want to get out and they want to sabotage their run, then it becomes. But do you know what doesn't add up to me is Kevin Owens. I've interviewed him a couple of times and I've seen a lot of stuff with him, and he seems very, very committed to working at WWE. And enjoys it, and you know Sammy's kind of similar. So, yeah, something doesn't add up here for me. I don't know what it is.
I think that with as passionate about the WWE that Kevin Owens is, I have a feeling that you're going to see sort of like a new clique almost with kind of headed by Kevin Owens. And Vince appreciates guys like that. He appreciated Shawn Michaels for many years, you know. So I think that Vince will recognize the passion that Kevin has. And in the end, I don't think that they will take any damage for this. If anything, this may build a bit of character with them after they take their lumps, you know?
Yeah. And you know, the other thing is, let's remember, now there are literally five guys on SmackDown who all have a bone to pick with Shane McMahon. Yeah. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Rusev, Aiden English, and Jinder.
Yep.
So, I mean that again, Survivor Series is interesting when you've got all that going. I'm not suggesting we're going to get a faction of all five of them or anything, but you know, common enemy and all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah,
it'll be fun to see what happens. So, David,
absolutely.
Where can people get in touch with you on Twitter to say hello and chat about wrestling?
They can hit the voice of wrestling up at ZoopSoul on Twitter. That's ZOOPSOUL. I may change it to the voice of wrestling, David J. McCutcheon, but I feel like that's a bit of a mouthful, Kenny. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's too many letters, but what I will say to you is the voice of wrestling handle is available, so you should just change it, I think.
I could just right off the bat. I could do that. Or I could do the Xbox thing to where, you know, you play with the people on Call of Duty and they have the gamer tags that would be like the voice of wrestling 69420XXX. I could do that if voice of wrestling is taken.
It's really infuriating being your friend, but ultimately I feel like it's just something I'm stuck with forevermore. So, you know,
the people have spoken. They love me, Kenny.
They do. That's why I'm stuck with you now. That's it, isn't it? Anyway, you can get me at Kenny.
Where can they get you? Come on, Kenny, spill the beans.
You can get me at KennyMC1985. You can get me at Inside_the_ropes. I want to thank everybody who came out to have drinks with us on Monday night. Ethan, one of the guys, came along. His girlfriend Isabel has now chosen Inside the Ropes as one of their new podcasts to listen to together, which is nice. Ennis was there. Big Ennis was just fucking causing it all over the shop. And then last night,
right? That's what he was causing.
Of course. And then last night, we had like a quieter thing. I didn't really put anything out about it, but basically, Ennis and Di were there. Ben and Tom, my friends, were there as well. So
huge shout to Di Owen, by the way, for being on putting the Inside the Ropes brand front and center
on SmackDown Hard Camp. Also, Ben and Tom, Tom had the Inside the Ropes t-shirt on last night, and during the Rusev Randy Orton match, you can just see Tom basically trying to put the Inside the Ropes t-shirt as far onto the camera as he could. Big props to them. And then Liam Stewart, who celebrated his 21st birthday yesterday, brought his girlfriend Chelsea there, and he decided it was a good idea to buy us all three Jaeger bombs each. And this was when I was about 12 double vodkas down. So today's 3-hour car journey home was great.
Oh, Liam, if I ever meet you, buddy, just remember who has the heart condition. I'm going to have to pass all those on to Kenny. He's going to have to drink six.
He did say it was the best 50 quid he'd ever spent. Mark Rennie will know what that means, won't you, fucker? Anyway. Did you see somebody in the community said, you know, how much money do we need to pay to get you to do the podcast after like a gram of coke? And I said, I'm not taking drugs for you people. And then my friend Brendan was like, I'll give you 10 grand. And I was like, let the negotiations begin. 10 grand to take a line of coke or a gram of coke. That'll fund my next 5 WrestleMania trips. Of course I'll do it.
I was going to say at that point, you know.
But to play us out, it's actually not going to be me and David who play out this week because I have been asked to put a sponsored ad at the end of this podcast because we are going to be introducing a brand new Patreon level pledge onto our Patreon page, and it is $20,000. And for $20,000, Robert Duffin will come to your home and he will fuck you. Now, I know that we had mentioned that on the original Recipe podcast. David, you've heard this as well. You're very familiar with
it. Of course. I am a huge fan of original Recipe.
However, the big mistake that Robert made is he was not clear on the rules. So he's paid for some advertising time here to give you the rules as we play you out. So here is Robert Duffin to explain the rules of the $20,000 that you would pay for him to ejaculate inside you.
Good Lord.
Hey everybody, this is just a quick note here inside the ropes to say that we are introducing a new Patreon pledge amount. Currently, you can spend $1 and get a WrestleMania 6 review. You can spend $3 and get all of our interviews and the Power Slam podcast early, the Power Slam podcast overrun. You can go up to $5. Also at the $3 level, sorry, you get the B pay-per-view reviews. At $5, you get the Big Four, the retro pay-per-views. You get all the $50 pledge podcasts. At $7, you get classic ITR and the NXT content. At $50, you can pledge for your own podcast and pick your hosts.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Stop till you reach the top, and what I mean is keep hating, you'll be winning a race.